City of Chicago, Mr. Weems.
Good morning. It may please the court. My name is Matthew Weems, and I represent the appellant, Ms. Porter. And as you may have read, this case is an employment discrimination case based under Title VII for religion and retaliation. My client worked at the Chicago Police Department as a senior data entry operator. She was a civilian employee, and she began her work in 1996. And throughout her employment, at least leading up to the facts that underlie this case, my client had Sundays off. She took medical leave, and when she returned, she was arbitrarily placed into a no Sunday off of Friday, Saturday schedule.
Well, actually, there are two layers of question here.
Sure.
The first, which I'm actually a little less interested in, is why you think that upon her return, the exact days of the week that she has off were part of the job. People with this job worked a variety of different shifts, and they were full on the Sunday off group and not full on the other group. So I don't understand where you get the entitlement from. But the other thing I would like you to focus on is the nature of the accommodations that the police department offered. And in particular, they offered, let me ask you, do you agree that they offered her a Sunday shift that was the 3:30 to, you know, it started roughly then, 3:30 to 11:30 shift?
My client vehemently denies that that conversation ever took place. And
she testified in the record, there's testimony from her that Hegarty, quote, mentioned they could have put me on midnights, something about me going to 3 o'clock to 11 o'clock, her saying something about maybe helping me do something about going 3 o'clock to 11 o'clock. I think it was a thought that maybe I should consider that. And she then explains why she didn't want to consider it. But why isn't that an admission from your client that they did, in fact, offer that to her?
Okay, I think the issue is that Hegarty made that comment in passing, and it certainly wasn't a guarantee.
Well, but that's not the way the accommodation process works. If Hegarty is authorized to deal with her schedule, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I guess
and she admits that Hegarty says they could put me on this other shift, which would have allowed her to go to church on Sunday mornings.
Well, the question is why didn't it happen then, and it never took place?
Did she ever file a formal request saying, I need to be able to go to church Sunday morning?
I don't believe so, but I don't think
that. And isn't that important?
I think it's important, but I also don't know whether or not that was required when she was switched before in March of 2005.
Well, before she did make a request. Actually, in 2005, when they assign her to the Friday, Saturdays off. That's March of 2005. She immediately sends a memo to a supervisor requesting Sundays off in order to attend church, and she's immediately switched
sure.
to Sundays off. So I want to know, I mean, it seems to me, actually, you can do it either way, but if you're going to go with the formalities, then she didn't formally ask for an accommodation. If you're willing to accept an informal process, Hegarty offered her informally the later shift on Sunday.
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't involved in the lower court case.
No, I'm not.
So I'm a little challenged in that regard. But
the fact is that later shift on Sunday looks to me, I mean, you can explain to me why I might be wrong, but it sure looks to me like a very effective accommodation for somebody who has a religious preference, or whatever you want to say, to go to church Sunday mornings.
Sure, I understand. I guess my client just feels like that wasn't ever conducted. The transfer never took place. She certainly never would have objected to it.
But she does object to it. She says in her testimony that she thought that wasn't. Let's see. She says, I have a baby. It wasn't my battle to try to switch. She thought she should be restored automatically to the Sunday off schedule, but the sure. police department is not required to bump other people out of jobs.
That's certainly true, but I don't think that was actually required.
They say they were full with the Sunday shift, four people.
They do, but I think you need to exercise a little bit of common sense and ask yourself why, if she was off on FMLA for almost a year, somebody was filling in for it. So, I mean, I would question whether or not that was even a bona fide requirement that four people were there on any given shift because obviously
Mike. Is there any evidence of that? I mean, well, I don't understand.
I mean, obviously,
why, if she's gone for all that length of time on FMLA, there are all kinds of people who would like to have Sundays off for any number of reasons, religious or just because that's a traditional weekend for our society or whatever. And so after whatever it was it about 8 months?
Yeah, 8 or 9 months, that's correct.
I don't find it surprising at all that they would have slotted other people in there.
Sure, that's understandable, but the other issue is there was also in evidence is there were these were civilian employees, but there were also police officers who were readily available, who presumably were the persons who filled in. If it's true that they always needed four people in a given shift, someone had to fill in for them, and those were obviously police officers who did so. And there's no reason to think that those same police officers weren't available to fill in for her then.
Edmonds on Saturday and Sunday.
Well, she had a number of things she did. She attended the choir. She did ministry teaching. She took a number of classes on Saturdays and Sundays. So,
what's ministry teaching?
She was studying to be a minister. So,
well, I don't see how you can I don't see how you can say to your employer, well, actually, I want to be a minister. So, in other words, I want another job, and I need to take classes, and I want to be excused from my classes.
Well, she was actually, prior to the FMLA, she had Saturdays and Sundays off.
You're in a seminary. You're studying to be a priest. You're in a seminary, but you're also working. And could you say to your employer, well, because I'm a seminarian and I want to be a priest, I think you should let me work, you know, irregular hours. I don't think that's what we usually think of as a religious observance, that is training to become a religious official. I've never heard of that as an accommodation.
I can't say that she was training to be a minister in order to pursue a different
career
path.
Well, you say she's taking classes because I thought you said she wanted to be a minister. Why else would she be taking these classes?
Well, I don't know that you can classify being a minister as necessarily being another job or career path. Some people, from the cases I've handled prior to this, some people have a regular job and then do ministry on their Saturdays and Sundays or whatever obligations they have.
But I thought your focus wasn't the Saturday classes, at least at this stage of the litigation. I thought the focus was just going to church Sunday morning. And she takes all these Sundays off, never once giving as a reason to her employer that it's because she wants to go to church. She says she's not feeling well. She says she's taking care of the baby. But I thought that this case had, at least at this stage, focused on the Sunday morning church services.
Sundays are the gist. The issue, as you mentioned,
she's not complaining about not being able to attend the Saturday classes at this point in the litigation.
That's not what was disputed in the district court. So that's not wasn't necessarily
okay.
presented here. But the issue.
So we don't have to worry about that at this point.
No, but I think it's sort of probative to say she was given Saturdays off as well as Sundays, which isn't even. That's not even a designated shift according to the defendant. It's Friday or Saturday or Sunday, Monday. So then that brings into question whether or not, you know, like I said, there's a genuine requirement that each person works. You know, they need four people on a given shift, three shifts an evening, and their weeks are Friday, Saturday off or Sunday, Monday off, and that's what
she wants the Sunday, Monday off schedule.
That's what she requested, but just keep in mind she had off the Saturday and
right,
Sunday
before.
So she could
attend classes to her heart's content, though, once she comes back, because she has Saturday off as a day. She has Friday and Saturday off. She can attend classes. She also wants Sunday morning off, but she doesn't like the 3:30 shift.
Right. No, the issue was at this stage, Saturdays weren't the issue. I can only presume perhaps she was finished with her classes. I'm not certain, but that doesn't appear in the record from what I reviewed. Okay. Simply the Sundays was the issue.
Does she have services on Sunday?
No, I'm not entirely certain, but they do have different services for different times of day, and I know that perhaps one of the reasons that the shift change wasn't sufficient is because she does the singing in the choir. It's not like she just goes to church like
but
every other patron.
This could be absurd. I mean, somebody could have so many commitments with their church, whether it's choir or whether it's teaching a Tuesday afternoon adult education class or something. You have to be able to work 40 hours a week for your employer, and there comes a point when the accommodation isn't a reasonable one.
Sure. Well, there was no issue as to whether or not she was willing to work 40 hours a week. The issue
but
was
they
simply
need her. This particular part of the Chicago Police Department requires 24/7 coverage. They need to put employees on this desk, so to speak, whatever it is. So you can't just have everybody designate to the police department the hours they're willing to work. That might not coincide with the department's needs.
I totally understand, but I have to go back to the argument of she had Saturdays and Sundays off. She was switched, if you look through sort of the factual history. She was switched quite a few times with ease. And so I guess being the non-movement, you have to ask yourself why all of a sudden was it an issue? Why is it that she was accommodated very easily prior to this, and then even when she was on FMLA, they found substitutes for her, but then all of a sudden, when she comes back, they couldn't do anything for her, and on top of that, they make direct statements saying, there's no way we're going to give you Sunday off. If you look at the facts, they say we're not going to accommodate you, so I just have to question whether or not, you know, the stated reasons are actually true.
Is that it?
Yep. Yes.
Thank you,
Thank
Mr.
you.
Williams. Ms. Lewis?
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court properly granted summary judgment to the city on all claims, and this morning I will explain that the city satisfied its obligation to reasonably accommodate Porter and to the extent it could do so without undue hardship, as well as the city did not take an adverse employment action either based on Porter's religion or in retaliation for any of her any protected activity. Beginning with her failure to accommodate claim, the city's response to Porter's request for Sundays off did afford her a reasonable accommodation. Ms. Porter wished to engage in weekly religious practice of going to church on Sundays, and the city was willing to allow a days off swap if there were volunteers and sought out volunteers, and the city offered her a later shift that would have allowed her to go to church services.
Can I take it from the tenor of your argument that the city concedes that she did, upon her return from FMLA leave, effectively communicate to the people in charge that she wanted this religious accommodation?
Yes, we do not dispute that for purposes of summary judgment, Your Honor.
Okay. So let me start with the one that you started with. They're asking for volunteers. That didn't impress me that much. I mean, so there are like four people, and they go and ask these four people, are you willing to swap with Ms. Porter? And they all say, not terribly surprisingly, no, just because Sunday is, whether for religious reasons or secular reasons, it's a nice time to have your day off. So if that's all the city had done, do you think that would have been a reasonable accommodation?
Well, I do think there is some authority for that under TWA versus Hardison. That's precisely what the employer was willing to do in that case, and the court found that to be a reasonable accommodation.
Just however, ask for volunteers unsuccessfully?
A willingness to allow a voluntary swap when that employee, too, was, well, that employee in Hardison was low down on the seniority list. And may not have been able to obtain a different job assignment under the bidding system there. So I think this case would be similar to Hardison, but of course we do have much more here because Ms. Porter was free to ask for a shift change to a 3:30 to 7:30 or a midnight shift that would have allowed freed up time to go to church on Sundays. And also, she was told that she would receive the next Sunday's off position when it was available by Mr. Perfetti. And
so is there a list that the city keeps of, you know, who wants to shift from one time assignment, one set of days off to another?
When an employee would like to obtain a shift change, they submit a form, the same form that Ms. Porter used when she requested a days off change, and they do keep that on file for the remainder of the year, and that's what the first thing they go to when a vacancy comes up.
And is there such a document in this record, or did she not submit such a thing?
She did not submit a request for a shift change, only for the days off change. And that
some people who work every Sunday, or do they rotate, you know, the way they do with doctors who have to give up a weekend, maybe every fourth weekend, depending on how many people there are in the office.
Now on this,
someone wants to work every Sunday, I assume.
Saturdays and Sundays are very popular days off, and the way that the city had dealt with the days off for these job assignments anyway was to divide them into Friday, Saturday days off and Sunday, Monday days off. So at this time, there was not a rotating schedule.
You're not answering my question. Are there some people who work every Sunday, or is it rotated?
Yes, there are some who work every Sunday. It does not.
By choice, or they're told you're the Sunday workers?
Well, I don't know what everyone's situation is, but they're divided into one group or the other. Some may have bid for one or the other along the way and wound up with that placement for that reason.
But you wouldn't be somebody who worked every Saturday and every Sunday. You would work either every Saturday if you were on the Sunday-Monday time off, or you would work every Sunday if you were on the Friday-Saturday time off?
That is correct. So with all three of these, we would submit that with all of these options available to Ms. Porter, the city satisfied its obligation to reasonably accommodate her religious practice of attending.
But how do they, suppose nobody actually wants to work on Sunday, What do they do in situations like that? Do they just tell people, or is it seniority, or what?
Yes, they would. Yes. Under the collective bargaining agreement, there is a provision that would allow allows for shift assignments based on seniority when a position is open. But yes, some employees will be placed, you know, even if they do not want to have to work on Sundays, they may.
They have
be placed.
Seniority. They wouldn't have to.
If they have seniority, they'd have the opportunity, they would be given preference when an opening is available. They could bid out of that. And Ms. Porter had that option as well, and she exercised it. She had submitted a request for a days off change. And just to correct something my opposing counsel said here this morning, no one told her that there's no way she would ever get Sundays off. Who was in charge of making that decision? Mr. Perfetti testify that she could submit the form and she would receive as soon as operational his operational needs would allow it, she would receive
how
the Sundays off.
How much seniority did she have?
I don't know how much she has compared to the other employees. She's been a senior data entry operator since at least 2001. I would only be speculating where she sits compared to her coworkers, though.
I take it that your position is that reasonable accommodation doesn't go so far as to tell someone you've got to work every Sunday because there's a religious person who wants the day off. Is that your position?
I'm not quite sure I understood the question. Is my position that we
think
we
it would ever be a reasonable accommodation for the police or any other employer to be told that you will have to require some people to work every Sunday because there are other people who, for religious reasons, want the day off.
That
employer says, no, I can't do that because the atheists, they don't want to work on Sunday either, right? Not they want to go to church, they want to do other things, right?
Right. Well, I think actually the Supreme Court in TWA versus Hardison settled that question. Title VII does not require displacing persons who have non-religious...
Well, I wasn't thinking really so much of seniority, but just it might be a company that had no union or anything of that sort. But I'm asking whether you think it even if the atheists don't have any seniority protection, whether the law really would require the employer to say to an employee, I'm sorry, but I have to make you work every Sunday because I have these religious people.
I do not believe that Title VII would... I think I'm still not entirely clear that an atheist, if an atheist had his or her own religious reason for not...
It doesn't have to be an atheist.
Just wants to.
Okay. Religious people who don't go to... They can be Jewish. They could go to synagogues on Saturdays instead. I'm just asking whether it's your position that an employer can't say to people who, for whatever reason, but not religious reasons, do not want to work on Sunday, say to him, you're going to have to work on Sunday because I have religious employees and they won't work on Sunday. So I have to, and that's the accommodation. Or would you say, no, the requirement of accommodation doesn't go so far that you can force people to work on Sunday because that's too much of a price for accommodation.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that. And I do think, I know Hardison...
Yeah.
And you said that's what you see in TWA, among other things.
Among other things, yes. Of course, there were the collective bargaining agreement issues.
Dependent on a collective bargaining
agreement. I would say it is not. When you look at the rationale of Hardison, the court pretty clearly states that Title VII does not envision that sort of unequal treatment, displacing people who have non-religious reasons for wanting a Sunday off in order to accommodate. I think TWA is versus Hardison is pretty clear on that. And also another in the Hardison case also explains why there would be undue hardship on the city were it to accommodate Ms. Porter's request beyond the things that it did offer her. And that is because, you know, I mean, this idea that it would be so easy to fill in for her and that the police department had managed for some time to do that my opposing counsel highlights here this morning, is a bit misguided. I think what's clear from this record is that it was a tough juggling act to keep the auto desk fully staffed on Sundays because police officers assigned to that unit were often there temporarily. They were detailed. They would be out on medical leave.
Are there 3 8-hour shifts on Sunday?
There were 3 8-hour shifts, yes.
Well, so one of them is like midnight to 8 a.m., something like that.
Right.
Well, could she be given that on Sunday? Or
could she be given a midnight shift?
A popular slot. Right?
I would assume so, too. And, yes, she was offered a shift change.
Well, there were two shifts she could have done, right? Because I thought the one that... was being discussed with Hegarty was I don't remember if it's 3 o'clock or 3:30, but the one from the middle of the afternoon until the end of the day.
Yes, that is the one that was discussed with Ms. Hegarty. Also
not
in the
quite
record
as bad
at
as a graveyard shift. So.
Also in her deposition at R447 at page 44, she mentions that at a later point the city did mention to her that it had midnights, but she did not want to. She chose not to take the city up on that.
She was offered the midnight to 8 a.m.?
In her deposition at a later point, this isn't part of the same July conversation with Hegarty. So there were the two different shift options she could have pursued. And, of course, the police department would suffer the cost of covering for her, both in terms of dollars of having to pay someone to cover her, or fill in the position, or lost efficiency if she weren't there and it couldn't keep up with the data entry work that was required that four people were needed to keep up with. So for all those reasons, summary judgment was properly granted on Ms. Porter's failure to accommodate claim. The court also properly granted summary judgment on her disparate treatment claim. She identified no adverse employment action that was based upon her religion. Her days off assignment was not based on her religion, and in any event, it didn't involve a change in her pay or benefits, so that kind of a scheduling assignment is not an adverse employment action. And also, there's no basis in the record to suggest that her religion was the reason for that days off assignment. There was nothing in the record other than the purely operational considerations that Sergeant Cedar testified about balancing the workload, balancing the workforce at the Autodesk.
Is that it?
Moving on to the other claims, Porter claims that she was subjected to a hostile work environment. Also, those claims fail. She basically puts together just a conglomeration of various directives and comments that at most show some rude or insensitive behavior. And her retaliation claim fails, much as her disparate treatment claim fails, because she identifies no adverse employment action, nor that any of the things that occurred, especially the days off assignment, which she highlights, occurred because she filed her request for accommodation or any other protected complaints. If there are no further questions, we do ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lewis. Mr. Weems, how much time does he have? Why couldn't she take, say, the midnight to 8 a.m. shift? That wouldn't interfere with her religious activities.
And actually, I think there was a stage before her FMLA where she did take a later shift, so I guess it's a question of fact whether or not that was actually offered. And also, I'd like to address the hostile work environment claims that my client asserted, and the error that the judge in the lower court committed was that, as the appellee stated, there were several comments that were made, and what the lower court did was they isolated each comment and actually didn't actually consider each comment. And then simply parse them out and then claim that none of them in themselves amounted to hostile work environment. That was pretty improper, given that every case that the judge cited also says you're supposed to look at the totality of the circumstances. And the cases that the lower court cited simply were not applicable. A lot of those cases, the clients had unclean hands. A lot of those cases, the supervisors weren't the actors. The other co-workers were the actors who took the obnoxious statements or made a lot of offensive gestures. In this case, it was the actual supervisors that did so.
Well, what was the worst comment?
There was some perhaps trifling comments like calling my client a church girl. But the other comment was simply from Perfetti, who was sort of the supervisor of Ms. Porter's supervisors. And he said, plain and simply, you can file another EEOC charge if you want. You're not getting an accommodation. I don't know what more direct statement you can have. And even if that doesn't constitute hostile work environment, it still would constitute retaliation, I believe, because keep in mind these are obviously...
That's a separate point. You said you wanted to talk about a hostile work environment. That's
sure.
Why I asked what you
sure.
thought was the most harmful comment that was made.
And, I think the retaliation requirement is slightly less onerous on my client. And using a reasonable person, objective person in my client's position, you have to also keep in mind my client was a civilian employee, and these were all police officers. My client was obviously I can't argue an eggshell type of argument, but my client was a church-going civilian employee in the Chicago Police Department, and they're yelling at her, telling her to sit down in her seat, following her around.
Well, I'm sure they yell at each other.
They may have yelled at each other, but there was no evidence in the record that Ms. Porter, prior to these incidents and prior to her protected activities, ever experienced any of these types of behaviors. And based on what I know about my client, there wouldn't be any reason to speak to my client that way.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Haynes and Ms. Luce.